This podcast is brought to you by my own Emotional Workouts for Your Well-Being training program. If you have no idea what that is, no worries. It's basically like a personalized workout program. But instead of doing 100 squats, you're working out your mind, your well-being, and your emotions. Think workouts, but for your well-being, backed by thousands of years worth of philosophy. When I was starting out in life, I would have benefited so much by having someone like Rumi or Plato or Aristotle to just be there by my side and coach me so I could design a life that was meant for me. Unfortunately, that's not available. Emotional workouts are the closest thing to just that. As you navigate through your life, emotional workouts remove all that stuff that gets in the way when you're trying to make those tough life choices. You can check it out at emotionalworkouts.com. Again, it's emotionalworkouts.com. Okay, on to the show. Hey, welcome to this week's episode. We have Kai Zhao joining us. He is the co-founder of Ultraworking. It's a project to help neurotic overachievers, a lot of us out there, embrace their powers. He has a really diverse career ranging from designing landing pages for Groupon, running MIT startup accelerators. He actually spends 9 months of the year traveling and organizing retreats and workshops. And he actually co-wrote a book called Gateless, which was an incredible book. Check it out. This week's interview is really interesting. If you're somebody who is thinking about the rising cost of college, if you have kids that are headed towards college or in college, or you are facing debt yourself or in school and thinking it all through, Kai did what a lot of us are thinking about, but most of us find a little unthinkable. He went to an incredible school and he dropped out. Not because he got bad grades, not because he couldn't handle it, but because he really made a conscious decision about what made sense for him and that college wasn't the thing. You're going to hear all about why. Talking about living your life in a way that is true to you, Kai is the guy. He has so many strategies. I couldn't even begin to summarize them. You're going to have to check out the episode to hear about it. But he works at this all the time so that he can have a life that is not just successful, but incredibly meaningful. I hope you liked today's episode. If you do, leave a review. And thanks so much for listening. Today on the show, I want to welcome Kai Zhao. Hey, Kai, how are you today?
Laura, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. I'm very interested in today's show because a lot of the guests we've had on, we've talked about the products, the things they're doing, their careers. But I think in Kai's case, it's somebody who's really wrapped his life choices around these ideas of authenticity. And so I'm excited to dive into his story and his adventure. I think you'll be as interested as I've been. We've talked some before the show, and he's got an incredible story. So, Kai, if you don't mind taking us back, because I think it's useful to hear a little bit about your story. You know, I'm a parent. I've got a 10-year-old. I'm definitely thinking about the burden of the rising cost of college. I know a lot of people in their 20s are just covered in debt and wondering, you know, what the value is. It's definitely been in the media. You were one of those people who decided to not go to college despite, you know, very good grades and, you know, doing well in school. Can you take us back a little bit and tell us the story of how that decision was made?
Absolutely. It's interesting because if we zoom all the way back and look at, you know, childhood, high school, I probably was the least likely person to have dropped out of college. My parents were definitely of that tiger parent mold, maybe tiger parent light, in that they weren't dogmatic about it, right? They, you know, emphasized grades, they emphasized the importance of education, but they were also very supportive in, you know, athletic pursuits and art and music. So I felt like I got a pretty good deal. But as soon as I got into college and kind of started interacting with the real world and making my own decisions, a lot of those assumptions about what it was all for started to bubble up to the surface. And, you know, somewhere in that soup of kind of being overworked and chasing after every possible opportunity in the first year of college, I realized it was just it wasn't a good fit.
When you say it wasn't a good fit, I mean, you know, certainly a lot of us went to college, we wondered about it, but how do you get from wasn't a good fit to I'm really going to do this?
Well, it definitely wasn't a snap decision. It took a lot of time before I was, you know, convinced that it was something that I had to follow through with, as opposed to a kind of pain or distraction that I, you know, had to overcome first. Right? The analogy that comes to mind is if you're training, if you're exercising, right? Some pain is not, you know, it's just your body telling you that you're working hard. And that's to be expected. And some pain is you should stop and lay off of it. So it took me 2 semesters to really come to grips with that.
Mm-hmm. And so you found yourself in the pain moment of saying, this really is something I have to stop. And what specifically would you say was the thing that was deeply stirring within you that was impossible to avoid?
Well, the biggest piece of it was kind of a mismatch between reality, what reality was, and what I thought it should be. You know, I think like many people going into college and, you know, a new city, being just wide-eyed, I had an expectation that, you know, it would be this this academic mecca of sorts where I could just learn and be surrounded by just an extremely supportive environment. And it was that. But it was also a lot of things that were distracting from it. And just for example, the way that courses are set up such that you have multiple things combined for your time, and each class is kind of a distraction from another, which is a distraction from social life, which is a distraction from extracurriculars, with all this pressure and formlessness around it. And yet the kind of reason that everyone's going is, you know, the reason I was there was in part for career preparation, but in part just to learn and satisfy my own curiosity. And so a ton of different competing goals, and none of them were really getting met, if I was being honest with myself.
And what I love, and, you know, true to this show, is that here you are at such a young age and this stirring within you that this is like not okay. This is not okay for you, despite how many cultural norms would tell you that you need to stay the course. You actually listen to yourself.
Mm.
And for others out there who are feeling that same concern, what would you say to them in terms of making this decision? I mean, what were the benefits? And, you know, if you were talking to somebody, what would you say are also the drawbacks?
Mm. Well, it's interesting because I think the...
And I should also say any parent out there that's thinking about whether it's worth dropping $100,000 in debt for their child.
See, I don't advocate people kind of stopping out of college if they don't have a reason to do so. It's one of those things where I think the right way to approach it is to try to talk yourself out of it continuously for several months. And if you haven't talked yourself out of it by the end of you know, whatever trial period, then maybe you should consider it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a difficult, you know, set of options to weigh. Advice that I'd give is really just you can't make these sort of decisions on the fly, because they tend to be very emotional, right? If you're overworked, if you're stressed out, if you feel trapped in a situation, there's a objective view of what's going on. But then there's all this, the kind of the subjective emotion and just agony that's stirred up into it. And my belief is that emotions and logic should both make the part of the decisions. Emotion kind of shines the spotlight of where you should, you know, pay attention. But then the situation should be analyzed in a very kind of logical state of, okay, what are my options? What's good? What's bad? What's neutral? What matters? What doesn't?
Mm-hmm.
And so, especially when you're in the midst of it, I think the first step is to find to actually carve out a bit of time and maybe perhaps private space so you can, you know, make that decision and evaluate things in a more, I think, reasoned light.
Yeah. So this question of how does one really trust themselves, right? And how do you think about decisions and getting through the muck of the emotions and the, you know, I call them imposter thoughts, but the things going on in your heads that are causing you to feel confused about your own beliefs and other people's beliefs. So your suggestion is to really just slow down and take the time to sort all of these things out.
Yeah. The problem or part of the challenge is that we kind of experience life as ourselves, and it's very hard to separate sometimes our perception of what's going on from what's actually going on. This is how you end up with this scenario where everyone's good at giving advice to other people, but terrible at giving advice to themselves or taking that advice, right? Because we're so attached to that experience and that story that we're forming inside.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to, even for a moment, kind of separate that and take a look at it from a different light, I think that's really useful.
So as I promised, you can probably tell already, today's going to be a deep dive, guys, not just talking about authenticity, he's just living it in his day-to-day life and his decisions. So Kai, I'm going to jump in today a little sooner than normal because I can't wait to talk about this a little more in depth. What does authenticity mean to you? What does an authentic life mean?
It is one of those deep, interesting questions, isn't it? I think authenticity it's a bit of a moving target, right? Because at any given moment, there's many different things many different motivations that are calling to us. And the kind of, it could be authentic to wake up really in the morning and get to work, or it could be really authentic to relax and not take work so seriously. And the decision of which one's more authentic, perhaps in a situation, well, that's where I think a lot of the interesting pieces lie.
Mm-hmm.
And so authenticity, in kind of my perspective, is being able to follow along and discover moment to moment what is most correct for you.
I love discover moment to moment. I mean, I just want to pause on that idea because, you know, again, so many people think about an authentic life, right? And I always discourage this idea that it's somewhere that you land and you sit and you stay. And so I love that idea, discover it moment to moment, because maybe you're sitting there and you're in bed and, like, to take your example, you're not sure if you want to relax or just get up early. So you're checking in with yourself and you're doing what to make that decision?
Well, I think that it's a combination of things, because much of the time we're not really pausing and thinking, we're just going, right? We're going off of habits, the momentum of whatever path that we've been going on previously. And so there's one part of it is that you need to get your head above water and take a look around and then go towards and plan your next jump. But the other piece is just setting up your environment and your decisions upstream such that you're kind of like when you wake up in the morning, you don't even have a decision to make. The decision was already made yesterday, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So how do you live moment to moment, though, and make the decisions beforehand? Explain that to me a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, I think for me, there's a trade-off between considering every option, mm-hmm, and kind of doing things efficiently. Take the example of just say you're taking a sip out of a cup of coffee, right? If we had to think about exactly what angle our hand had to kind of be in to grasp the handle of that cup, and like the minute movement of how to keep it balanced and then move it to your lips and then tilt the cup just enough such that it doesn't overwhelm you and spill all over, there's a very complex series of things that's going on.
Yeah.
And if we were to kind of pause and evaluate each one of them, even very simple tasks would become impossible. So I think we kind of have to balance the planning and that introspective side of like, am I on the right path, with the actual just being in the moment and being.
Yes, absolutely. And that's right. If we have the unconscious part of us that has the habit of picking up that coffee cup, because otherwise we'd go crazy if we had to think about each piece. That's pretty much what a one-year-old would have to do. It takes them forever to lift up a cup and take a sip. But right, then there's the part that we want to bring into consciousness to question the value of it for ourselves. So if that's the process and you're basically turning inward to make these decisions to trust yourself, how do you know when you're making an inauthentic decision? What is that experience to you?
Well, you start getting these warning lights and this loud siren. Actually, I have my own answer, and I'm actually not sure how well it generalizes, but there's, I think, a lot of intuition that's built in around this. And there's questions you can ask to try to look at it. But for me, it is somewhat of an emotional thing. It's like if the spotlight is pointed a particular way, then it's like, huh, I need to reevaluate this. So
you get these warnings, it feels a certain way in your body or your mind, or what's this experience for you?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think there's a couple different parts to this. One is just kind of moment to moment. It's like, wait a second, this doesn't feel right. Or kind of, wait a second, there's something that I haven't addressed here. And let me take a moment to try to figure out what it is.
Yep.
I do a lot of just private journaling. I kind of write down every morning what I intend to do for the day. I write down every Sunday what I intend to do for the week. And I write out down on the first what I intend to do every month. Mm-hmm. And a lot of time, and I actually review these every single morning. And in these moments of looking at it, I oftentimes can sense, like, wait a second, I told myself that this week was going to be completely heads down and focused on the work. But, you know, I've been spending a lot of time, you know, chasing down just more speculative opportunities. Am I on track or not? Is this correct? Do I need to reevaluate what my decision upstream was? Or am I, like, which one is more correct? So I have these kind of snapshots that I'm comparing with in writing.
And for somebody like yourself, who has always been connected to this part of yourself, you know, that process has become a muscle that is, you know, really exercised. For myself, I had disconnected so completely that those warning lights, all the things you're talking about, were going off, and I had become incredible at bulldozing over them. I just didn't care. And I talked to Dr. Shefali. She's this amazing child therapist. She's on the show as well. And she's been on Oprah and all over the country touring about her experience with children and how they split off at a young age if they aren't seen, if they don't feel like they matter, and they lose connection to their authentic self. And so the reason I think this is so valuable for those of you listening who may have had more of an experience like myself, where you're sitting in a job, you're in a position, you're somewhere in your life in a relationship, and you can't make that decision. Often it's because this space and time that, you know, I hear you saying, Kai, that you create for yourself to really just keep that loop of checking in all the time, right? It's a muscle that is being used on a daily basis when you write in your journal and when you make your list. It just gets stronger and stronger, and you trust it ultimately. And it's for people who don't have those systems that are not in place. And in large part, they're not in place because they're trying not to listen, or they've gotten accustomed to not listening. But it comes back around in the stress or the sense of overwhelm, because it builds up over time if you don't listen to all those warning lights. So I love the way you talk about that. And to kind of change gears just a little bit into, like, the, you know, we've been in the very conceptual, very deep level of authenticity, but, you know, I'm pretty obsessed with this idea that, okay, yes, there's this sort of deeper authentic self, and we need to learn to cultivate our ability to trust and listen to it and not bulldoze over it, because it's very subtle. It's a very soft, quiet space. And, you know, it requires that journal or that cup of tea to really hear. But now I'm in my life, and I've made that authentic decision. For me, it's doing this work, or for you, it's leaving college and doing the things you're doing. You've got so many different amazing projects going on. But then reality starts to hit, right? Like, and we're still dealing in real experiences. And sometimes you kind of have to just try things, wouldn't you say? Like, I sort of feel a sense that this is right. And then I go out in the world and, right? What's your thoughts on the experience part of authenticity?
Well, I think the point about just trying things is absolutely right. The way I got to these systems, the way that I've kind of reached the answers that I've reached is through a lot of trial and error, a lot of just kind of tiny little experiments that have been run. And especially for someone who's still trying to figure out their system of how they want to evaluate, how do they want to get the feedback, viewing it in terms of kind of what experiments can I run, what little tests can I put into place, mm-hmm. I think is not a bad mindset.
Yeah, so you're trying something new. You think it feels authentic, but the truth is you don't know until you get out there. And then you try it and you're like, this is better or worse than I thought. I mean, actually, there's been things where I thought it wasn't that authentic and I've tried and it felt amazing. So I think, too, we can sometimes confuse fear with an inauthentic decision. So I do think trying things is actually very, very important in the process.
And one thing to keep in mind is I tend to the belief that everything in the very beginning is kind of unpleasant, that many different new, like people starting companies or people trying out a new workout, or it's like everything has a learning curve. And so often, people bail out before they reach the point where kind of continuing actually, feels good and is beneficial. They invest the very beginning, but then they lose that down payment when they don't follow through. So I do have a bit of a formula for it these days, where I try to scope projects that are very fixed in length, like a couple weeks to a month or two, long enough such that it's enough to get a real taste of what that activity or behavior is, but short enough that I know if it doesn't work out at all, it's not a huge hassle. And right. The more of these you can cram into your life, I think the quicker, the more data points you have to go off of when you start making the decisions.
And it all hinges on, again, that exercise where you're checking in with yourself on a regular basis. Is that right?
Yeah. Self-awareness is kind of a key ingredient to all of this. And there's that big lingering question of how to build that. But maybe we can explore that in a bit.
Yeah. And so I'm out there, I'm starting a project, I want to do something different in my life. There's many people listening who are thinking about making a change. And so I set up smaller goals. And, I'm a big proponent of that idea as well. Like, do some piece of it. When I was stepping out to find something new, I bought a computer so I could try being a writer. And I wrote a page, right? And it's like, right? And I said to myself, I'm going to go and I'm going to do this for a couple weeks and see if I even enjoy the writer's life, right? Because I don't know, maybe I would hate sitting. I mean, I actually thought of myself as somebody who could never sit alone and write for an extended period of time. So you test drive your projects for a period of time, you do them for a couple weeks, and if you're enjoying yourself, if it feels good, if there's that internal loop feedback saying, yes, you keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. There's two kind of realizations that I've had that will make sense intellectually, but I think you have to have them ingrained at almost a gut level to kind of like really start embracing it. And the two realizations are that most failures are very survivable. And the other side of that is that most activities also have some positive growth, some thing to be gained from it. And the sooner you can trust that that's always true, I think it just makes it much easier to go forward and do a lot of different things and start testing out, right? Which one of these works for me?
Yeah, absolutely. And I had your partner in crime on the show, Sebastian, and he pointed out something, and I wanted to get your take, but the idea that, look, you go out, you set your 2-week window, you've tried it, and it's just hard, right? There's a piece that you love, but there's also like 5 pieces that are difficult. You're not loving every minute of it. Mm. to me, that doesn't necessarily mean it's not authentic, right? It just means to do the thing that I love, there's also these parts that the world forces me to also deal with. Otherwise, I just can't do the part that I love. For example, as a writer, I would like to write, but say I don't love to market. But if you don't want to market, your book's going to sit on a shelf. So
absolutely.
How do you think about, I know you do a ton of projects and you consult. How do you think about that idea?
I oftentimes think that the question of benefits and like whether something is a net benefit or a cost is, it all depends on what time scale you're talking about. Because in the shortest time scale, sleeping in the morning and having that piece of cake and or just kind of giving up when things get rough, like that's always the biggest payout in the short term. But the longer you draw your horizon, the longer you want to kind of delay the gratification, oftentimes the more sense it makes to, go through the difficult parts and kind of approach those challenges. So in the example of a project where you, in the kind of writing a book example, right? If you're just writing for personal, just kind of catharsis or kind of just to get your thoughts organized, it maybe isn't a huge deal. If you say in the morning, you know what, today I just don't feel like writing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not a good habit to get into if you need to be consistent, but it also doesn't take away from your end goal, which is just feel better in this moment, organize my day. But if you're a journalist, if you have to deliver something on time every single week, then kind of your career depends on that, right? If you're trying to publish a book in any reasonable amount of time, then that time scale, it might make sense to be able to push through.
Right. And that these are externalities, say you're a journalist and you do have to get it done in a certain amount of time, but it's your craft, you're a writer. Sometimes you have to deal with these realities of the external world or you won't be able to keep that job as a journalist and do the thing that you love.
Yeah. And I think people naturally do have an intuition about this, because the things that tend to fall off our radar or that people promise to themselves that don't happen, they tend to be more personal goals. Like most people show up to work, right? Because there's enough of an external force there that even if they're waking up a little groggy, a little tired, and they feel like doing something else, they'll still check in. Whereas if instead of work, it was going to the gym, I would bet that kind of scenario shakes out a little differently. So I think a big part of the game is to find ways to externalize the things that are most valuable to you personally.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so do you have routines, daily practices, habits? You mentioned journaling, but what helps you continually make these decisions that, again, I think most people would look at your career traveling most, would you say 70% of the time? it's not the norm and you're very happy. So how do you continually make decisions that work for you? Do you have daily practices and habits that help support this life?
Absolutely. I tend to see it in two different layers. One is the daily habits, rituals, and kind of tactics, and happy to list off a bunch of those. But the other piece that I think is really maybe underexposed these days is just the sense of your identity and kind of like my sense of who I am and what's the story of the life that I'm living right now. And I think these two combine in that one appeals to that emotional side of self and kind of like, and answers that big existential question of what is this all for? And the other is the more kind of in the mechanical physical world of kind of like, hey, how do I keep myself on track? How do I, track progress? How do I kind of remind myself and keep from things from going off the rails.
And so, before we get into the tactical, can you elaborate a little bit about this? Identity is my favorite subject, just so you know. I don't usually talk about that. what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's interesting because this this idea came to me when I was very much, this was well after the kind of college days. I'd left, I'd made a pretty successful career for myself in software. And I was reaching this question of, it's like, should I stay in Boston? And I was trying to decide whether I should stay or whether there was something else for me out there to explore. And the question that really helped me come to grips with this is, if I were trying to write the Hollywood script story of my life, right, what would that character do? And like the kind of the story where I stayed in Boston and continued in that circle, it just didn't make sense from that kind of like what I thought my life should be.
I love the idea of writing a script and creating an objective view of yourself, right?
Yeah, well, I think it shifts the perspective a little bit, right? You can answer this question in a lot of different ways. From the, if I were on my deathbed looking back, what regrets would I would have had if I, like, there's a lot of different ways to move the flashlight around and see how the shadows are cast.
Yeah.
But I found just this idea of what journey am I trying to represent? What ideas, what identity, right? That this is very loose, kind of like broad sense of self. It's like, what exactly is that? And does this fit with, or how do these different decisions fit within that?
I feel like so much of life is trying to actually learn who you even are. I mean, I joke sometimes, it would be great if we were born with an instruction manual. And it said, like, model number 472, Laura, as a proclivity towards dislikes, right? So a lot of life is really this self-actualization. You know, Aristotle talks about that and, you know, many of the greats. But yeah, I think creating that objective lens to think about self, and then which one, what resonates the most when you're playing that, doing that exercise? Is that how you determine next steps?
It's in part what inspires it. And I think it's important to also bring up that this is not entirely a nonfiction account of your life, because I throw the tag of Hollywood story on there for a reason, because what I'm trying to get at is almost an ideal. It's something that's motivating for you to think about, as in, this is the journey that I'm on. It's like the, maybe what a, if you're a company, it's what the mission statement should be.
Yeah. I actually have my clients write mission statements. I think it's so important to have a personal mission statement. You can change it, but it's very helpful.
Absolutely. And like an inspiring mission statement is not, yeah, we deliver 80% effective, you know, things that are a little bit better than the competition. It's no, like you want to kind of, you want to capture the value in such a way that it's something that, you know, feels like a great challenge that you can rise to.
Yeah. And what I love about this process, and I've seen time and time again, is we often start with the external world. We say, I want to make a change. And then we look outside of ourselves. This is what I did. And then we start thinking about all the ways in which it can't work, or I would like it to work, or all this stuff. But the reality is if you're not straight within yourself first of what you're really looking to do, and spending the time on that, as you say, you know, Hollywood story or mission statement, you're then bobbling around the world like, sort of like a chicken with its head cut off, or, you know, aimlessly. But this really gives you a very clear sense of the goals, and then you try to match that to the outside world. And that process is so much more effective. It's something it took me years to come around to, but much easier. So, Kai, what are the tactical? I don't want to leave without maybe even stealing some for myself. Can you give us the laundry list?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll start with the simplest, but I think probably the most bang for your buck one. And you know, I can't claim to have invented this, but I came across it on Medium maybe about a year ago. It's basically change your computer passwords or your phone passwords, your kind of email, change them to affirmations or reminders of something that you're working on. Because these are instances that are going to repeat dozens of times per day.
Yeah.
And so you might as well kind of have them serve some purpose. And yes. This guy, I wish I could remember his name, but he kind of used it to remind him to quit smoking, to forgive his wife after a divorce, to kind of like just accomplish all these long-term goals. And of course, you should throw in some symbols and numbers and weird capitalizations to make the password secure. But this is something that anybody can implement that I've found to be just super effective in terms of oh wait, you know, this is like that's a good reminder.
Yeah, I love that.
So this all comes back to this idea of externalizing your goals. I'm a huge fan of this one quote. It's self-discipline is not about self-suppression. Self-discipline is letting your higher desires rule your lesser desires. Mm. And again, just because we're human, just because we get distracted, just because the world is a very kind of a like complex place sometimes, it can be useful to take those higher desires and just, you know, spread them around into your environment and the things you interact with. That way you don't go very long with losing track of, without seeing them again.
I love that quote. That's wonderful. So any others you want to leave us with before we close the show?
Absolutely. I use an app that is, you know, perhaps somewhat similar to Sebastian's light spreadsheet. It's called The Way of Life, and that is, it's on iPhone, but I'd be surprised if there wasn't a Android equivalent.
Okay.
And what basically is, it allows you to put together just a list of things that you want to do every single day. And it's this little grid, and you can, you know, check it off and it turns green, and you can say, no, I didn't, and it goes red, or you can skip a day. And it's basically just this, and you can also set it up to bug you at different points in every day. Like, hey, did you meditate today? Did you eat healthy? Did you do all these things that are in that set of higher desires? And I check this thing just as a habit, basically. It has this little badge that look, it's the same as the same one that you'd get for a text message or whatnot.
Nice. And
it's just always there on my phone. And whenever I have free moment, when I'm standing in line somewhere, when I'm, you know, checking my phones for some other reason, it's just a nice little subtle reminder. It's like, oh wait, there's, it's like, if I have a free moment, I could do any one of these things.
Very nice. Instead of just jumping on social media again.
Yeah. I actually have a folder on my phone called Idle. And this is one of the things I have in there. And I put kind of Instagram and all the other things on a hidden category to the right of it. This is the only thing in that Idle one that's initial. So in order to get to social media, I actually have to go through the Way of Life app.
That's awesome.
There's another one out there that I've looked at, but I haven't tried out, called Momentum for iPhone. It's also a Mac app, so you can sync them back and forth.
Cool. Okay. Fantastic. Well, Kai, this was packed with information. I'm going to check out the Way of Life app. It sounds actually pretty cool. And I just appreciate all of the insights and your honest story and, you know, personal habits that help you navigate your journey of life. So thank you so much for being on the show. If people are looking to learn more, I know you've written a book and you're always doing incredible projects. Where can they find you?
Sure. Well, online, I'm kind of pretty easy to find. It's just Kai Zhao, KAIZAU.com. And the main project that I'm working on now with Sebastian is this kind of company called Ultra Working. And it's you can check that out at ultraworking.com.
Very cool. Thank you so much for being here today. I very much appreciate it.
All right. Likewise. This was a blast.
Thanks.